session number 10413, rule 9.
Mr. George South, Reel 9. We were talking about the beach defences at Chiddock you were establishing, or helping improve, and the problems you were having with the weaponry available.
Well, it was the lack of automatic weapons. At that particular time, you had one brain gun to a company. And so, you didn't know who to give it to or where to put it. And it took quite a while for us to get back to full strength of weapons. You had a 2-inch mortar. And as I say, we were preparing the beach defences, making our own, extending them, and standing to in morning and night. And during that time, we got the stand to of the invasion of Britain.
What do you remember about that?
We stood to all day in the trenches. And it was after we were stood down, after the scare had gone over, because the weather had, at that particular time, had deteriorated, and there was no chance of invasion. We did hear, again, rumours, as usual, that there was German bodies washed up along the British coast, south coast. And after the stand down, I was asked to instruct the local defence volunteers. There was a general lived 2 or 3 doors away from where the company HQ was, and he was running the local defence force. And the first day I went there to do this, I found that they had the Browning automatic rifles, which are big, cumbersome things. It's American, I think it was. And here's us down on the beach with old-fashioned weapons. And it was around about this time that my company commander, Captain Taylor, recommended me to be promoted to PSM.
That's platoon sergeant, Major.
Platoon sergeant major. Because I was doing platoon commander. I had no officer in my platoon. Unfortunately, or fortunately, it just depends which way you look, a week later, part 2 orders stated that the rank of PSM had been abolished.
Did you know why that was?
Because it was right throughout the army.
It was quite controversial, though, the PSMs. Did you know why they'd abolish it, or what the
Well, the PSM was formed once, at least when it was formed, was for people that was in charge of a special detail, such as in our battalion, you had the pioneers, which was bricklayers, joiners, sanitary men, and all the, and they had a sergeant in charge. And I think it started to become out of hand a bit, such as what I just said. I was recommended to be PSM, and it was getting away from what it was intended for. It was beginning to spread. And so, as I say, a week later, it was abolished. But if you'd held the PSM at that particular time, you kept it, but no more would be made. And so, unfortunately for me, I didn't receive that.
So what happened? Where was your next move?
We moved from there to Yeovil, where again we went on intensive training.
Had the training changed at all? Were they using live ammunition, or was it? Had the lessons of the campaign been brought into your training?
We did start issuing at that time the enemy with blanks, not live. At that particular time, I suppose it was because a lack of ammunition, and these old rifles, at least we were thought they were old rifles, they were the old Ross rifle. And I think it was during that time that we got the little pig sticker, the sharp bayonet, and gradually we were brought up to strength. The automatic weapons started coming in.
Which time?
The Bren guns, so that we were back to normal. Each section had a Bren gun. I was there quite a while. At Abbotsbury, while we were at along the Lyme Regis area, this is where we first met Montgomery.
What do you remember about that? Because you later met him a fair bit.
Well, he came to inspect the defences, and you know, he was here, there, in a way, in a crack. We didn't really get to know him till a while after that.
What was your first impression of him?
Well, it takes a long while to go, to me anyhow. The point about me was that I became known as the rebel, because an officer had to prove himself to me before I would accept him.
What had caused that? Because that was a change in attitude from when you'd originally mm-hmm. said you'd walk over a cliff, mm-hmm. and now this would happen. What had caused that change?
Well, two things, I think. One, I had now got into the way of the 8th Battalion as a territorial battalion. Another was that you got young officers coming to us with bringing their own fancy ideas. Some of them, as it'll probably come in later on, some of them that had ideas of their own that didn't agree with the rule book as it was. And so it took me a long while to accept an officer. And so what I thought about Monday that day was he was a canny little fella. But I hadn't by then formed any opinion of whether he was good or not.
With your second lieutenants, lieutenants, captains, that sort of thing, how did you show this rebelliousness or this unwillingness to accept them till they proved themselves? How did you behave towards them?
Question everything I was told by them to do.
And did they object to that?
Some did. Some did. And I'll probably say that was the end of my promotion days. As we go further on, you'll find out why. But as I say, it took me a long time to accept an officer. He had to prove himself to me, yeah.
That was while you were at Abbotsbury that Montgomery came?
Chiddick area, Chiddick area, yes.
So that'd be in the summer of 40.
Mm-hmm.
And you'd gone to Yeovil from there. Where did you go from Yeovil?
Well, we were then brought into a different part of the Monty's command, and we went to Honington in Devon. And we're at Honington for quite a while. Again, intensive training. And most weekends, we used to go out on a Friday onto Exmoor, fight a battle, and arrived back at Sunday night. Hail, rain or blow. And I may say that I've trained in some awful conditions. But there were weekends in Exmoor where they were terrible. I've seen snow a yard deep. In fact, on one occasion, one exercise we're on, a carrier crew, they were that cold, put a tarpaulin in over the carrier and run the engine. The next morning the engine was still running and they'd been suffocated. And a bus went over a ravine full of soldiers, and they were all injured, and the exercise was called off because it was too bad. But it was there at Onion that we were warned that we were going on foreign service again. A lot of rumours flying about that we're going to get fair coats, we're going to Iceland, we're going to get K-Day, we're going to the Middle East. And the whole battalion went on a medical. And at that particular time, my sergeant major, my company sergeant major, was a sick man with bronchitis. And I was doing his job, acting CSM. And when we went for this medical, both me and this company sergeant major were both declared unfit for foreign service.
What was wrong with you?
What was wrong with me? Varicose veins. The company sergeant major, who was getting on in years, to us, he had this bronchitis trouble. And anyhow, after a lot of weaving and dealing, I was sent for to go back for a medical. And so was the sergeant major. And I was sent to Exeter General Hospital for injections in me, varicose veins. And I used to go every Friday for 6 weeks. And I was past fit to go abroad, so was the sergeant major. But the thing was, I was excused marching. And eventually we went on embarkation leave, came back, and we went to the Middle East.
Did you want
the
to
early
go?
Part of...
Were you keen to go?
Pardon?
Were you keen to go?
Yes. At that time, yes. Looking back in retrospect, it's the worst thing that happened to me, but that's by the way.
And when did you set out?
We went out in 1941, the early part of 41.
And where from?
Well, we entrained at Honiton. And we finished up at Gurek on the Clyde. And we boarded the Empress of Richmond, the Drunken Duchess. Even on a flat safe, it rolled.
What were conditions like on board then?
Oh, very good. The only, as I said, the only problem was, if it had been sailing on a mill pond, it was rolling. We had a good time on
did
it.
Did you have any problems with seasickness?
I didn't, because at one time I tried to be a fisherman. And I used to go, I'd been to Bear Island, the Dogger Bank, and the White Sea. So I had no problems, at first, anyhow. And seasickness, we had a terrible lot of men. Seasickness. And because I was one of the people that weren't suffering, I got the job of going below decks. The squad of men were in the same boat as myself, cleaning all these latrines and passageways that the crew of the Duchess of Richmond had refused to clean, because there was no doubt about it. When you went in the latrine, you know, when you stepped through the door, it was about that deep in.
Oh, that foot.
Terrible. And we had to get this away. And after a few days on this, I began to feel seasick. But by this time, people were pulling themselves together. And so I was all right after that.
Which route did the Drunken Duchess take?
Well, I couldn't tell you which route it took, because you went all ways, sideways, backwards, and forwards. The Exeter was, HMS Exeter, was our where we had destroyers, but Exeter went right to Durban with us. We called in on our way to Freetown. We were there 2 days. The white man's grave, and one of the crew of the Duchess of Richmond died because he had no salt in his body. And he just dehydrated. Away tonight. From that, we went, after 2 or 3 days, we sailed down to Durban. And landed at Durban. We were there about 5 days, I think. And we were going around in KD, we were doing marches, rope marches, and then off for the day, and the people of Durban were very good to us. The only problem was and it happened to quite a few of us that were taken out into the sugar plantations. And the white people in the sugar plantations were frightened of the black man, like it is today, I suppose. And it was the first time that anybody had asked me to desert and live in South Africa. And so I never went out to the sugar plantations no more. I stopped in Devon.
So they were asking you to desert and become sort of armed guard for...
Quite a few of the boys was asked. I don't think, at least I cannot remember, anybody that did tear itself up. But we were asked. The point was that we were walking about in KD's Lathard, and it was midwinter's day there, June. Then, that midwinter's day, and they were walking about with scarves and top coats on, and we couldn't understand it. We were roasting, and they were shivering. And from there, we went up to. We went up to Port Chuvik, and on the way, Exeter, used to carry a walrus seaplane. I think it was a walrus. And we used to have aircraft action on the boats. This walrus used to dive bomb us. And unfortunately, for one day, he was dive bombing and the wings just left it and straight into the sea. Although the boats were there in a crack, both the pilot and his co-pilot, or his navigator, whichever it was, were both drowned.
What were you actually practicing? Just taking cover?
No. See, the boat was had boffers on, machine guns. You all had a boat drill for action stations or abandoning ship. You all went through that every day, and this was an aircraft action. Of course, you were mounting tripods, putting brain guns on with the ammunition. And it was to keep you on the move and keep you very alert. And I remember one old boat, old tramp steamer it was. And during the night, on quite a few occasions, it used to be astern of us. And at dawn the next morning, it used to be in front of us. And there was quite a lot of chat about it. But he was one of these skippers that it was his boat and he was looking after it, and that was as far as it was going. And eventually we finished up in Tewfik. The Exeter left us before we got there. It went on to India, the Indian Ocean. And we went into a camp. We were there about 3 weeks. And we did very little. Because most of the battalion was sick.
Always.
Well, it was what they call a gyppo stomach. caused by the sand. And it was a kind of dysentery. So he couldn't do parades because the boys were running here, there and everywhere. Some too late in getting the trousers down and they were in the right state. And it took about 3 weeks to get over that. And then we started doing desert training. And eventually...
How did desert training differ from any other training?
Well, the only thing that differed was camouflage. You couldn't dig a... You couldn't dig a slit trench or a trench because it caved in. And after a few weeks there, we went up to Portside, got on the boats again, and went to Cyprus.
What was the situation in Cyprus when you arrived? Were you aware of what was going on? Or?
Oh, yes. We were aware, because Kos had fell just before that, while we were on the seas. And we knew that, or felt that German would probably go for Cyprus next. And so we went over there onto the aerodrome and we had to defend the aerodrome, the 8th Battalion. And so we had to make defences. And the majority of the ground was rock. So we were all issued with picks and shovels. And the REs came. What we couldn't shift with a pick or shovel, they shifted with a shot. And we made a complete defence around that aerodrome. Fire base, fire steps, communication trenches, pillboxes.
Would the REs make the pillboxes for you?
We helped.
They'd be concrete ones, would they?
Yes, concrete pillboxes. And the thing happened there that we used to go out on a week's training, one company at a time. And I think it was B Company had out for its week's training at the bottom of the mountains you used to go, Trudos. And on the Friday, he used to return on the Saturday morning. On the Friday, they were asked whether they wanted to do a forced march back to where we were, or an attack on one of the positions. And they decided on attack. And so at stand to the next morning, we used to stand to then with line of ammunition, fixed lines for the brain guns. And just after we stood to, I saw two bodies coming through this defile about 100 yards away. And lucky for them, I recognised the leading scout. So we had, they advanced on my positions. And then the company came up with this D file.